Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
BetOnline remains your top spot for all your live betting action and contests. NFL, college football, UFC, and NHL are all in full swing. BetOnline is your number one source for wagering news, odds, trends, and predictions. With both desktop and mobile access at any time, head to the BetOnline today and use our promo code BLEAV for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts.
I'm Rahul Castillo, alongside me is Chris Brown and Youper. And you can find us on Twitter at MCM Baseball Pod or at Tigers Minor League ML Report. And also, we do have a Patreon that I barely promote. And there's going to be some that right now is kind of in a state of, okay, we got to make it better and trying to get some extra additional content going with that. So also, we do have a GoFundMe for the Tiger Minor League Report, and we're trying to get some donations going to go to spring training. So I'll put the link here in below. And we also have a famous pot. We have a famous guy on our national feed. Thank you, Todd. Yeah, that's what I was trying to go for. I wanted to make it a little more professional this year. 2024 is all about taking my time a little bit, making sure that I don't rush into things when I have plenty of time to prepare. So, but yeah, the GoFundMe is in our YouTube link right there. So if you want to donate, great. All that will go towards costs throughout the season, gas, you name it, possibly repairing a headlight because my headlight went out. but anything that's car related or trip related, we'll definitely go to that. And also for gear, for equipment, not necessarily just like, for example, if Youper wants to get a set of headphones or whatever the case is, everything goes back into what we do. So we appreciate it. And yeah, so plenty of ways to give back, but plenty of baseball to get to this evening as the Tigers have got the best bargain bin shopping they got done today. And I'll go into that a little bit. Youper was on the NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt. And we're trying to find the clips right now. So
I just saw it. It's out there now.
Is it out there? Okay. So we're going to play it. I'm going to go find it here in a second.
I talked to that guy for 10 minutes. I thought I was incredibly entertaining, and he used about 2.5 seconds of it.
That's how it usually goes. They usually use the part where you're like, this is like picking your nose or some opportunity. Yeah. Marcus Stroman to the Yankees.
That's I remember, Raj, you managed to get us on Channel 4, Local 4, a couple years ago. And they talked to us for 5-10 minutes. Yeah. And it was, you know, a conversation. And yeah, you watch, and it's there were like three clips of a second and a half a piece. For it. So,
yeah. By the way, if anybody ever, they were asking us about Lou Whitaker not going to the Hall of Fame. And it was, maybe some people, this might be new for some people who are to the show. Cause I gotta, you know what? I like to know how many people caught on or how long you've been listening for. Like, so if you're, are you like Youper, who was an original, Youper's been listening since what, 2015? Youper?
Oh, back.
Yeah. So yeah, if you want to tell us how long you've been listening to the podcast for, that would be fantastic. So that way I have 2 years, $37 million for Stroman.
Not bad.
Yeah, not bad.
That's a lot less than I would have expected.
Yeah, I think he underestimated his market a little bit. So,
I mean, that's less than Giolito, right?
Yeah, I believe it is.
About the same. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, not a bad deal.
Not bad deal at all. Yankees waited out the market a little bit, but so here's when we were on the Local 4.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'll just wait for that part to come up, but. So wait a minute. Wait a minute. Let's go back here for a moment and realize like where were we? We were.
That's the Miller's.
Miller's. Yeah, we're at Miller's Bar in Dearborn, and I think that was the first time you went, right, Chris?
Yeah, and I think I mean, this was pre-pandemic, right? Because I think I went from my work. Look at you. You look like you're about 15 years old, Raj.
Chris Brown and Roger Castillo host a podcast, Tigers SRD.
He's among the top five second baseman of all time in terms of stats. He has a higher WAR than Derek Jeter.
They say the numbers speak for themselves.
Yeah, I like the Whitaker big at Jeter.
Was the Rookie of the Year in 1978. He has five All-Star berths and three Gold Gloves.
Anyway,
he and Alan Trammell turned 1,918 double plays. Tram is in, Sweet Lou is not.
It's not over for him. He's got another chance in 2 years, and we're still holding out hope that he'll get in.
These guys say it's time the Tigers retire his jersey. In Detroit, Jamie.
That's it. There were some tasty burgers. So.
Yeah.
I didn't get a tasty burger where I was.
So about 1.5 years. Okay, so just over a year, when Michigan couldn't beat Ohio State. So Deadly Ninja Bees has been around for a while. Okay, wow. All right. So I'm trying to find some of the, I know on the listening side, Chris, I know we have some people that been who listen to us purely on an audio format. I've been going back some ways. So I was just kind of curious on that.
It was funny. You know, I was at this thing today. What happened was,
go ahead. I want to hear this.
It was supposed to start at the TV this morning. The TV news said the event was starting at 11, right? So I show up at about 10 to 11, quarter to 11. It turns out the doors are opening at 11, but the event's not till noon. So I'm got an hour, but I didn't really want to go anywhere either. So I grab a chair kind of toward the front on the aisle. But what happened was, and I had no idea, this was right by where the press was going to stand. So for that hour, I was bombarded by questions because these guys had nothing else to do. Men and women had nothing else to do. And I was one of the very few people there yet. So all of a sudden, NBC News has me on. CBS News had me on camera. I was talking to the Washington Post, USA Today, the New Yorker Magazine. I mean, a lot of big name places. It was pretty hilarious. They asked me a lot of the same questions. So I started to kind of like, you know how politicians get their answers kind of canned after a while.
Yeah,
that's how I felt. I felt like, I'll say the same thing to this guy. And I was actually a little bit bored toward the end because after about 12 or 15, you hear all this, they all want to know what I do for a living. So I started telling them, well, I'm a professional musician or I'm a petroleum engineer.
You should have told me you're a podcaster, man.
I know. That was pretty hilarious. So
I host I'm part of a podcast network of talks Tiger baseball, and then they would, and maybe they ask questions about that. But
yeah, I'm sorry, I wasn't fast enough maybe for that. I was sucked into the political moment.
It's all good. where is okay? So you said they posted it,
and you got to go to NBC Nightly News, not the NBC News, but NBC Nightly News.
Oh, and on YouTube or something.
No,
I was looking for it on the
online. It's under a Nikki Haley story.
Ah, okay.
That's what.
And I'm not promoting Nikki Haley here. That's not
gaining momentum. It's
not a political show. I get it.
Hey, listen, we could use a female president. I mean,
yes, we could.
I
thought I said a lot of entertaining things, right? And they took something kind of,
I found it. And then we're going to get the show properly started because I there's a lot of baseball to get to. Matt Wood. There we go, man. That's awesome.
Nice.
2019, he has a Tigers SRD shirt. That, you know what, there, man? Matt Wood, send me a message or something along those lines. I'm going to give you a minor league shirt for that. That's pretty sweet. So, OG listener right there. That's awesome. That goes back some ways. All right, so
4 years ago,
Yeah.
5 years ago.
Yeah, that was around the time we did the Lou Whitaker thing, too, I think. Yeah, so and we appreciate the comment, Detroit Degenerate. We appreciate that nice comment there. But anywho, let's get this going because I do want to get, there's plenty of baseball to get to, but I just, for the sake of pure curiosity, I wanted to see how he did on national television.
How growing.
She's as qualified as any person running for president in the last couple decades.
But Haley's recent rise.
That was it. I made a joke. I said, she's as qualified as anybody to run for president. And I said, given our last couple, it was a pretty low bar.
Yeah. You know, they don't want. Was that dude standing on an apple box?
No, he was very tall too.
Oh, okay. I was going to say,
I was probably an inch taller than him, but he's a pretty tall dude. He's about 6'5" and a half.
Oh, wow. Okay.
A Garrett Hake.
Yeah.
Nice guy.
So let's get to baseball. Of course, we saw Marcus Stroman sign with the Yankees. The Tigers came to arbitration and agreed with a lot of, pretty much everybody came to an agreement. I think what was the last time they haven't had a disagreement on, was it? I feel like it's been.
They didn't go to arb with Turnbull, did they? There was somebody in the last couple of years. Now I'm forgetting who it was.
Yeah.
I didn't see. Did they come to an agreement with Mize?
No. So
he was the last one.
Yeah, Mize is the only one they haven't come to agree with. So Tarek Skubal, $2.65 million. That was reported by John Morosi. Jake Rogers, $1.7 million, and that was reported by Evan Petzold. And Akil Badu, $1.5 million via John Morosi. So, but yeah, everyone but Mai said no. Pretty much at this point.
And they still have till tomorrow, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
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 So yeah, the Tigers historically haven't gone to arbitration much. I feel like they finally did with somebody. Maybe it was Fulmer, as Kyle Clark says. I don't remember exactly who it was, but
yeah, Kyle.
You know, it's never older. It's you know, going to that you know, arbitration is never a great process. You hear from players what it's like, and it sucks. Because the team basically says this is why they are no good and why they don't deserve any money, and you like. I remember that Corbin Burns, right, had a terrible experience with the Brewers, and it was like, oh, God. And, yeah, it's there's no, you end up fighting over, you know, what amounts to maybe like $100,000 or $250,000 or something like that. And in the large, you know, scheme of things, that doesn't matter at all. But teams are weird.
Yeah, and
Back in the old days, I don't know if it's still this way, but I remember back in the old days, do you guys remember a guy for the Padres named Billy Ullman?
Didn't ring a bell.
Well, anyway, he's in the 80s. He was talking about going through a experience once where they were going over all his little micro slumps. Like he went 0 for 15 once while they were going through a 4-game period where they dropped out of first place. That's how minute they were getting in some of the hearings. And the players are just really sick of that.
Yeah. I mean, late 80s, we saw collusion. The Tigers were part of the collusion in 86 with Jack Morris, Kirk Gibson, and Lance Parrish. I think there's somebody else too. And yeah, Josh pointed out that Juan Soto got a nice cool $31 million.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I think he was probably a Super 2 guy, wasn't he? So he gets 4 years of arbitration. And, you know, they used to have kind of a 20, 40, 60 model. And I think it's more like, you know, 35, 55, 75 or something like that. But yeah, Soto, that's probably about 80% what he would get on the open market. And I went back and looked, and looks like actually the Tigers did go to arbitration with Turnbull in 2022, wow. Which isn't a real surprise now, is it?
No, not a surprise whatsoever. No.
So,
it's crazy. He's still out there, too, as a free agent.
Yeah, shocking.
Yeah, I mean, there's. I was thinking about that the other day, and I'll be curious if somebody picks him up. But I think he's going to probably end up with an invite to spring training. Like, I don't know if he's going to get a big league deal. We'll see, you know, once – all these dominoes continue to fall. You know, it was Shoto and Imanaga. It's kind of the first there. And now Stroman, apparently. So we've got a couple more pitchers out there. And then things are going to get really interesting with the you know, third-tier pitchers and the trade options.
By the way, so thank you, Kyle. You just let us know that Evan just reported, didn't settle on a 2024 contract before the deadline to exchange salary figures. And according to Evan, there are a foul. Tigers are a foul and trial club. So the two sides will head to arbitration unless they agree on a multi-year deal. Not expecting a multi-year deal in this case.
Interesting. You know, I wonder, boy. Well, you know, I mean, it's always tough when a guy's been injured, right? And he's probably expecting to get paid as the number one overall pick and what he did. But you remember when Turnbull was ramping back up or Mize was ramping back up at the end of last year, and then there was kind of a setback that they didn't ever really give us any more details on it. And then supposedly things kept going on, but you wonder if the Tigers know more than they're letting on and maybe are a little more reluctant to chill out some dough there. I don't know. That's reckless speculation at this point, but who knows?
If, to add to that reckless speculation, that was he was throwing 95, 96. And then when it was asked about being shut down, I'm paraphrasing, but as I recall, when he was throwing at Comerica Park, it abruptly shut down. And they said that Myers was kind of at this point just wanted to go home and what have you. So that's what was kind of reported out there. But
it's, I was wrong. Yeah, I guess tonight was the deadline, huh?
Yeah. So it's very interesting. And this goes, and then somebody was mentioning, like Tyler mentioned here, about signing Brandon Woodruff to a 2-year deal. I think the Tigers still will probably add another pitcher here just in case. And that's, again, this is why we've been saying this all offseason. You can never have enough pitching. And It makes sense. It also kind of makes sense if you think about it. Sawyer Gibson Long's been in town quite a bit. So, I mean, there was like this automatic assumption that Casey Mize was going to start the season here, and that Long would start the season in Toledo, but he has a good chance to make it.
Just to take that reckless speculation and you know, speculate even further, you know, the offseason makes, you know, when they sign these pitchers, I was like, all right, well, they got to make a trade now, right? Because they've got too many pitchers. Well, maybe you don't have too many pitchers if you're not counting on Mize at all. I don't know. Again, reckless speculation, but I don't know. That's interesting. Hopefully it's just a small disagreement and they come to terms and everything's good. But I'm a little bit curious about this one.
So speaking of pitchers, by the way, the Cubs did pitchers the Tigers were interested in, reportedly, was Shota
Imanaga.
Yes, thank you. He signed with a 4-year deal with the Cubs for, I believe it was $85 million. So he'll be penciled in. He's going to be penciled in as a 4-for-5 starter for Chicago. And real quick before I don't want to get too far off the track, Dom, yes, we have some Parker Meadows. We have a Parker Meadows question or a debate on Parker Meadows coming up with the Rookie of the Year conversation. So stay tuned for that part. So we'll get to that. But, yeah, so a couple other signings that happened as well. We just mentioned Marco Stroman. The Dodgers signed Teoscar Hernandez to a 1-year, $31 million deal. Ridiculous. The Mets signed Harrison. I think we talked about Harrison Bader. Sean Manaea, 2-year deal with the Mets. And the trade that happened today, the Dodgers made a trade that I know one of our listeners, Stan, was just talking about this guy. And the Cubs and Dodgers made a trade where the Cubs pick up Michael Busch, who was the minor league player of the year for the Dodgers last year, and reliever Yency Almonte to the Cubs for prospects Jackson Ferris and Tyler Hope. So that does clear the 40-man spots for LA, and the Cubs designated catcher Brian Serban in for the first assignment in the corresponding move. But I really like when Stan brought up Michael Busch, and I think we brought up Busch before too. This is a guy who, in terms of left-handed hitting production, he hasn't had a chance. He's been stuck down in LA. I mean, he's gotten an opportunity, got a cup of coffee, but the Dodgers clearly didn't need him. And so that you were able to get that and restock their minor league system a little bit too. So,
well, Jackson Ferris is what, a second round draft pick coming off an excellent season. So
yeah.
Pretty nice prospect for Busch.
Feels like one of the annoying things that the Dodgers do every now and then, where they find these deals where they still manage to get prospects.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what was the deal with the Reds a couple years back? They got involved in that and somehow ended up with who's the guy they ended up shipping off to?
Josiah Gray.
Yeah, Josiah Gray. They shipped off to the Nats, and they had somebody else in that deal too. It was Jeter Downs, or I don't know, but they ended up getting prospects that they were able to turn into more valuable. And you know, I'm pretty skeptical of Michael Busch, and maybe it's not fair, but when you're barely in the big leagues by the age of 26, I'm a little bit like, you know, the Dodgers aren't dumb. They could have been playing him at second base instead of Miguel Vargas if they wanted to. They could have been doing anything, and you know, he's not a great defender, and there's some offensive talent there, but yeah, it wouldn't shock me if the Dodgers end up on top of this deal.
Yeah, somehow they'll be able, somehow we'll see Jackson Ferris become like this big stud because they figured out something already with him ahead of time.
I mean, he was like you've said. I mean, he was among the best left-handed high school pitching prospects in the draft that year. It was just 2 years ago, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he was a big name. So that's like you've said. That's a quality arm to add to your system. That's already pretty damn good.
I was just going to change course. Just hair. Imanaga gets 4 years, 53, right? I was surprised it was that low. I was expecting a lot more. Now, maybe he had no interest in Detroit. We don't know that. But that sure seemed like an area of money where any team could have played.
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, there were reports that it's a strange contract. You know, if it's 4 for 53, he can opt out after 2 or 3, I guess. And if he doesn't, then it automatically goes to 5 for 80, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody reported that another team offered twice as much money, but he wanted to play for the Cubs.
Oh, so, I didn't see that. Okay.
So it may have been twice as much as the kind of the initial lump sum or whatever that he can get. I don't know. It's a kind of a smart move by him, I think. If after 2 years it turns out that like he's very good, well, yeah, you're 32 or whatever, you can go get a very nice contract. And if not, you have some really nice, you know, if he's just kind of average. And I've seen people compare him to Yusei Kikuchi, right? I think maybe he was even you. If it doesn't work out, he's still, you know, making life changing money. So it's a good deal for him, and it's fairly not risk free, but pretty low risk for the Cubs.
By the way, Ferris's numbers at Myrtle Beach, pretty impressive. Yeah. And he, in terms of K per nine, you're talking a guy who had K per nine 12.4. He struck out 77 in 56 innings pitched. The walks are a little bit concerned. I mean, if they figure out the walks, but he only allowed one home run and 56 innings of work in 18 games, in 18 starts for Myrtle Beach last year. So I figure out the Dodgers will probably figure out a way to emphasize that, figure out a way to weaponize that. But as far as that, yeah, for his market, you know, you guys are right. I mean, maybe it's the Tigers who offered that much and you just wanted to go to Chicago. But this also puts off the big checklist that Chicago has. They're like, well, wait a minute, we did something. We're done now. I mean, I don't think the Cubs could do something else, but there is some people. Nobody wants to play for San Francisco. There's this Bush equals Malloy, no defense. Paul, that was a good comment too. That's true. I mean, he is a bat first kind of guy, and the Tigers already have a couple of those. But now, yeah, now you look at the trade market. You look at Baltimore again. We point to Baltimore because Baltimore really hasn't done anything on the starting pitching market. I mean, they added a reliever. Do they need starting pitching? I mean, is it really one of those things where if you look at their current rotation right now, heading into today, and this is according to Fangraphs, if you look at the starting rotation right now, you have Kyle Brenish, Grayson Rodriguez, John Means, Dean Kramer, and Cole Irvin. So are you going to roll the dice with that and just kind of keep it going?
That's not as sexy a list as the list of their position players. That's for sure.
Yeah.
It doesn't match. You would think that you just wonder, are they waiting and waiting if they're going to be ultra patient, see which free agent is last on the market that they like and see if they can get the deal they want because they're notoriously a little cheap, you know? So we'll see if that's what's going to happen. Or, you know, a trade. I mean, it's still, you know, the first half of January. A trade could still be brewing.
You know, I just wonder if they just have a much higher opinion of their pitching than everybody else. You know, they won 101 games last year. They may just be like, yeah, we know what we're doing. Shut up. it does, like, you know, Bradish had a really good year, and Rodriguez really came on there at the end. I'm looking at they ended up sixth in pitcher war. And I think a lot of that was driven by a pretty awesome bullpen. But I'm looking to see who. Now, Bradish was almost a 4 WAR pitcher. Bautista, Cal Gibson's gone though. He was their second best starter. Grayson Rodriguez, I think, you know, he's got a chance to be a real nice pitcher. So I don't know. I mean, it does seem like if I were a Baltimore fan, I'd be like, hey, we've got all these prospects. The time to do this is now. You know, our window is like the next 5-6 years with all these young guys coming up. Let's go get some good, you know, ace pitching. But maybe they don't think they're quite there yet, or maybe they don't think they need it. I don't know.
Jordan Montgomery's still out there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Montgomery and Snell.
To me, that's a guy that would seem like a fit for them. Shouldn't cost that much, but still a quality pitcher that you could put into that rotation for, you know, create depth on the back end by putting him third and pumping, you know, bumping a couple guys back. That would be the move to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I would think that we're going to probably see a flurry of activity here in the next probably week or so before spring training starts, which is 38 days away, I think. Did I see that today? 38 days away. Holy bleep. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. Montgomery's basically a younger left-handed Kyle Gibson. Yeah. It's it kind of fits that role right there. You know, he's coming off a really strong year, but he's not a big strikeout guy. He's just a...
Well, and they made that left field much bigger now.
Yeah.
That'd be perfect for a lefty.
You don't have to worry about, you know, right-handers taking you deep.
By the way, the Yankees also brought back Luke Weaver, too.
Yeah.
The former Cardinals prospect, Arizona Diamondback pitcher?
Correct. Who got traded to the Yankees last year. I believe he got traded.
Okay. Yeah. So Badu got $1.5 million. Remind me how this works if he ends up in the minors. Does he get
100? That's a good question. I think once you hit arbitration, I think you just get that, right?
I think so, too.
Yeah.
So that's pretty nice for him. Nice chunk of change and, you know, no pressure for him if he earns a spot. Obviously, he wants to. But if he ends up in the minors, that's pretty good living. Assuming they don't cut him. Because they can cut him at certain points for X amount of the money, correct?
I think that's how it goes. You know, I mean, it's been a while since I remember the Tigers doing that.
Right. It doesn't happen often, but you can cut a guy for like 25% of the money, and then at another point it's like 75% of the money or something like that.
Yeah.
By the way, Paul is on the Ortiz, Baltimore train there for Ortiz, and that Boston idea actually isn't bad either. Boston really has also been kind of – Boston's relatively quiet this offseason. I mean, the Chris Sale trade to Atlanta aside, I can't really – it's been – ho-hum. So go ahead.
Well, it's weird. Like, you know, we keep hearing the Giants mentioned in a lot of things, and they keep coming up short. And then Boston, you don't even hear them mentioned. It's so weird to me that these big market teams just aren't spending. I don't know. If with Boston, that goes back to the Mookie Betts trade. It's like, I still can't believe they just decided we can't pay that guy.
Yeah.
You know, the second best player maybe eventually becomes the best player of this generation if Mike Trout never gets healthy again. And they're just like, no, can't afford him. And it's like, obviously, yes, you can, but you don't want to for some reason, and you're going to get Jeter Downs for it.
Oof.
Right.
And, you know, and not to mention just how beloved he was in the market. Yeah. I mean, he's just an icon, a marketing beacon for them. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, he's even a good bowler, too. I've seen him on some specials where he's been bowling, but that is John Henry. I mean, John Henry, if you're talking about, I think he owns, is it Manchester U? He owns United,
one of those Premier League teams.
Yeah, Premier League teams. I mean, it's a completely different story, but he's treating Boston like a small market, which is kind of astonishing to me. But
yeah, and Boston got Giolito for $38.5 million, so about the same as Stroman, right?
Other than that.
Nothing.
Yeah,
I would rather have Stroman.
I think I would too. I think Giolito at his best might be better than Stroman at his best, but Giolito has rarely been at his best, and Stroman is one of the more consistent kind of number three starters in baseball.
You don't know what you're getting from Lucas Giolito almost from month to month.
Yeah.
Not even year to year. It's month to month with that guy.
Yeah, there's you know what the interesting thing when I saw that that deal, it was exactly that. I was just sitting there going, okay, well, what is his local numbers? Because I felt like there's one starter who'd be really, really good, like against the Tigers. The Tigers knocked him around quite a bit. And you look at the here's how inconsistent he was last year. And this is where I'm glad you bring this up, Uber, because you're looking at, as far as splits go, early on in the season, he was good. I mean, you're talking here, April and June, he had an ERA around just about four. Then June, he hammered it down, 2.32. Then in July was where he July, and is between the Angels and the White Sox, had an ERA close to five, or he had an ERA over five in just five innings of work, but he pretty much had hovering around that. And then in August was horrible, 7.24 ERA with the Angels. And then with Cleveland down the stretch, he had a satanic ERA, 6.66. So it is exactly how you mentioned it. And you know what's funny, Uper? It was the long ball that started becoming more of an issue for him. He gave up 10 home runs and 25 innings of work in September. 10 home runs. Seven home runs. Yeah, and even his May where he had that ERA near just over four, was seven home runs and 34 innings of work. But 10 and 25, holy, I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to do some math quickly enough to do that. But,
Sir Matthew Boyd, 2019 numbers or whatever. I don't know. It's I think you're right when you talked about expecting to see some uptick in activity now. I think it's that time of year. You know, it's NFL playoffs and it's baseball free agency. Get ready for spring training. So I do think we'll probably see several things this weekend, if not early next week. Not with the Tigers necessarily, but
you know, Chris. You know, it's one of those in baseball too, but you know what? It just dawned on me. There's something that, you know, it's something happened this week and we haven't talked about it. And I know that we have a kind of, you know, it's something that happened and we haven't had a chance to talk about it. And, you know, like I know I didn't kick off the show with it because I was too busy worrying about the intro of the show and everything. Cause we had some good suggestions on that. We want to have a professional show and we want to be professionals and we take pride in that, but we have to.
Yeah.
You made Nick Saban retire.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. What a strange week in football. And you know, first of all, you've got Michigan winning the national championship, something that I never thought could happen, honestly. And then you got Saban retiring, you got Belichick getting let go, you got Pete Carroll getting fired, you got all these crazy, like, you know, institutions. But yeah, it seems like it was time for all of them, really. Pete Carroll was the one that was kind of surprising to me because he's still been the Seahawks have been pretty good. But it was a pretty damn good week to be a Michigan football fan. We don't bring it up very often. Because we know we have plenty of Spartan fans. There's Ohio State fans here. There's a bunch of people who don't even care about college football at all, or football in general. But I will just say for me, my two favorite teams in all of sports are Michigan football and the Detroit Tigers. And it's been that way since I was a little kid. And those would be these two championships would be the two that bring me the most joy. And I honestly.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So he didn't think it was possible for Michigan football to do that. I just thought that the game was for Alabama and Georgia and Ohio State and these guys who go out and get 15 five-star players every recruiting period. And just to bring it back to baseball, but Michigan won basically by developing really well and by absolutely nailing a couple of recruiting classes that weren't five-star guys. They weren't ranked five stars, but they're absolutely five-star players. You see that in every sport. That's why the Lions have gotten better. They've nailed the draft for a couple of years in a row. And Michigan, particularly Michigan's sophomore class with Will Johnson and Colston Loveland and Keon Sabb and the two defensive tackles, Mason Graham and Kenneth Walker. Like, those dudes are all like five-star talents that somehow they managed to get. And that's, you know, they got a little bit lucky catching a down year from Alabama and Georgia, but they went out and won. And yeah, it's I don't know. I hear a lot of people too. There's a lot of spite, and this is always the way. And I've been that way before. You know, like when another, you know, when the Michigan State wins or Ohio State wins, and you hear Michigan fans acting all, you know, snippy. But for me, like after it happened, I was like, man, I just hope that everybody gets to feel this someday. Just the happiness of your team finally winning. It's just a great feeling, and I hope everybody gets it at some point. And I hope we all get it with the Tigers relatively soon.
Yeah, somebody brought up a point, Tyler, thinking that the 2024 will be another year of wait and see a player development. And I think he's right about that, because the 2025 market, as he said, is a better market and a better idea who's part of the future. But as far as Michigan goes, the only thing I'm going to say is that I'm glad I have a really weird relationship with the University of Michigan right now. But I've always had. I graduated from the Dearborn campus, and although the degree, which is right above me in my eye, like I'm looking at it right now, does say Ann Arbor. People from Ann Arbor don't look upon people to go to Dearborn campus. It's really weird. It's stupid. I never understood it. I actually got to work for the University of Michigan for a marketing job last year, and it didn't end well. And so I have a really weird relationship with the university right now. And the way it was dealt to, I was told I was in Ann Arbor enough, whatever the hell that means. So at any rate, but seriously, that was a very satisfying win. They beat a very good Washington team. Penix looked beat up. I mean, he was literally holding his ribs. I felt bad for
literally beat up. Yes.
Yes, we're getting to baseball. We can talk about other things here. Baseball, geez, I mean, beats, folks.
It's been 26 years since they won a national championship.
Yeah, we'll get there. We've been talking baseball for 95% of the time.
Well, all I'll say about Michigan was I've been watching Michigan since I was a little boy, you know, listening to Bob Ufer on the radio and the whole thing. What I was impressed by was this defense. It'll go down as one of their greatest defenses in the history of the school. There's a lot of guys out there who are going to play on Sundays. That's NFL talent on all three levels, basically. And they won a game against an offensive juggernaut like Washington, where they made them look very average. Washington missed a couple of plays that they could have had, but overall, Michigan defense just shut them down and beat them up. And, you know, J.J. McCarthy, what was he, 8-for-16? I mean, they completed 8 passes. I mean, something small, right? They won that game with their defense, and I'll always remember that. That was pretty amazing. And Blake Corum.
Yeah, Blake Corum was a beast. All right.
Yeah, we could talk about every single player on that team if you want to, but we're not gonna, because it's a baseball thing. But I wanted to say, like, that's just it's the common thread among championship level teams is the development and nailing the draft, or recruiting in this case, and that's right. What you're hoping the Tigers have done with that 2021 class that includes Riley Green and Spencer Torkelson and Colt Keith and Kerry Carpenter. And you're hoping those guys form the core, and we've seen glimpses of it, but you know, maybe it all gels together this year and we're, you know, looking like a future contender, or maybe it doesn't, but that's how you do it. That's how those Tigers teams of the '80s, you know, that was built on Trammell and Morris and Whitaker and Petrie and Parrish and all those guys coming in the draft. And you have to have the right people in place. And I feel like the Tigers do now, but we need to see the results start filtering up to the major league level.
No, absolutely. I mean, Erie winning the AA championship does boast well. I mean, that is something you can hang your head on. And speaking of minor leagues, by the way, I saw a graph, I think it was posted in our Discord, that the Tigers is one of the most underrated farm systems out there. And that's something that has never, it doesn't happen very often, but I'm with you in terms of just results. This should be the year of results with that. So if we do see what we saw in Erie last year come up at the big league level and make a contribution, then you can feel more excited about 2025. But if we're talking 2024, I do talk about this season. I still think, and we'll get to there's a rookie of the year topic here. We're going to get here in a second. Fundamentally, this is still an opportunity for the Tigers to add a bat without sacrificing the farm. And I think if you look at the way the rest of baseball is done in terms of AL West for a second, Seattle, they're retooling because in terms of where they stand, they have to, because based off not getting that revenue stream for the TV contract. So they have to change their approach. And I'm just looking at the NL West, or excuse me, the AL West particularly. We all know the AL Central has been very quiet, but look at the West for a moment. Texas, World Series, it's hard to repeat. Well, they're going to be good because they have a really good farm system. They're going to be back. Houston, same thing. But the rest of the division, the Angels, what the hell's, you have no idea what the hell's going on over there. Vegas, now the Vegas A's, that's a joke. So, and then you look at the AL East, even with the Juan Soto deal, the Yankees, I still think the Yankees are still going to not have enough pitching to get there. Boston, we just talked about. Tampa's still going to hang around. Toronto, I think Toronto, whatever those Ohtani rumors are true or not, I expected Toronto to be more in the market. And surprisingly, they haven't been, you know, Toronto's haven't been active. I really, or am I just, I don't know. If you guys think of Toronto had a good offseason, let me know.
Not really.
No, I'm trying to think. I don't know. We came into the offseason knowing that was not a great market for bats. And it's been, you know, the signings have reflected that, really. There's been plenty of pitcher signing. And it's been, I would say, like slightly average to above average pitching market. I guess, you know, when you throw in Yamamoto and Ohtani potentially pitching, it's above average. But yeah, I think a lot of teams are just kind of like, well, we would like to add, but there's nothing out there that really helps us that much. But there are teams like I mentioned before, like the Giants. It feels like they're in on a ton of guys and they keep losing. And it reminds me, I think it was Andrew Friedman had a quote a couple years ago that said, like, you know, if you make rational decisions every time, you're going to finish third in every free agency. And it feels like that's what the Giants are doing. They're just like, well, no. It reminds me of being in like a fantasy auction. And I'm like, well, I'm not going over $15 for this player. Yeah. And then you end up not getting anybody you like because you are, you know, you're sticking to your program.
Thank you for the intel, by the way. We had a commenter. I don't want to your first name incorrectly, but we did get a good comment about Toronto. I mean, they did bring in the infielder. Why am I drawing a
Kiner Falefa?
Yeah, they got Kiner Falefa.
Kevin Kiermaier.
Yeah, who's been there before. And then they have a couple minor leaguers, too, that are their prospects are not as deep as it once was. But, I mean, they have a guy by the name of Orleves Martinez that's really good. I mean, that's the first thing I keep in mind, too. And they got a couple pitching prospects, too. As well, that Tiedemann's really good. Go ahead.
Well, they brought up Davis Schneider last year, who had like a crazy, like, oh boy, is this real? It doesn't feel real, but he came up and was very productive. They have the Addison Barger kid that I know you liked a couple years ago, Raj. And
yeah,
there's some help there, but yeah, they're not making huge moves in the free agent market, that's for sure.
And not to mention, too, they're getting back. I know Zach Pop was coming back from injury, and he pitched a little bit last year. So they get a full season. He came back from Tommy John, right?
Did he? Do you have another one? I don't know. You know, I remember him as,
he was with Marlins. And then they picked him on the winding road. Yeah.
Yeah, they took him on but I think he was originally with the Orioles or the Dodgers.
Dodgers
went to the Orioles in the Manny Machado trade and then got picked by the Marlins in the Rule 5. And yeah, it's he's a, you know, big power arm reliever, but I don't know. There have been times when I thought that maybe Toronto was a fit as a trade partner for the Tigers, but people have talked about maybe Espinal, but he's not much of a hitter. He's kind of Andy Abanez with more glove and less bat, which is saying something.
So there's three questions. There's a couple questions in chat, and then we have our topic question. But I'm going to go with the original topic question that we were discussing. And I'm going to ask everybody in here to participate on our YouTube comments, or if you're at home, please do. So Matt Chapman is still unsigned. And we've mentioned him now for three straight podcasts. But again, just it's the market out there is showing that, hey, you know, he's willing to wait it out for the right deal. And if you're the Tigers, do you sign him to a 1-year deal? And I'm going to post that in our chat real quick here as a poll question. But I'll start with you guys. 1-year deal on Matt Chapman, Chris Brown.
I mean, yes, if you can get a 1-year deal, then I would absolutely do it. I just remain skeptical that he's going to accept a 1-year deal. But if that's available, then sure, I'd take him over, you know, Matt Vierling.
No reason not to roll the dice on 1 year. I mean, even if it's for, 15, 18, 20 million. Who cares?
It would be like Teoscar Hernandez. It would probably be like 32 million in order to do that. Yeah.
That's fine too. The Tigers have the money. That's not even a question. You know, if you give him 1 year plus a player option, if he wants it, fine. I mean, anything short, I don't see the downside to it. You know, he's a good glove and he hit a few home runs and they have an opening. So why not?
All right. So I put a poll question in there too. So far it's off. Wow. We got 90% in the poll so far on our YouTube chat. So.
Well, I don't think anybody's anxious to see Matt Vierling get 125 starts at third base, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm fine if he gets 50 starts at third base for whatever reason. I mean, he came on with the bat a little bit at the end, and he's obviously a decent enough player for your bench. But if you want to contend in the division, if you really want to make a good concerted effort at doing this, I think you look to get better.
Yeah, we talked about it before, but I like – you know, Ibanez, McKinstry, and Vierling on the bench sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah.
Forcing one of those guys in the starting lineup, not as good. and who knows? Maybe Vierling is – he just needs a swing change. He's a guy who needs a swing change. He's got all the other – he hits the ball hard. He's relatively fast. You know, he doesn't swing and miss a lot. He does everything else you want, but he hits the ball on the ground too much. And it's frustrating.
Go see J.D. Martinez's coach, whoever that guy is. The mystery man.
Yeah, didn't he? No, JD was. I'm trying to remember if he was one of those Craig Wallenbrock guys or whatever. But yeah, I know it's obviously it's much easier said than done, right? If it was easy to do, then people would be doing it all the time. But
so we had 22 people that voted in our poll, and 81% of the audience on our YouTube channel said yes, sign him to a 1 year deal. 18% said no. It's not 22 votes. So
there's a relative vacancy there. It would work. I still think there are too many teams out there that might be willing to go multi years on him. From, I might talk about it before, by WAR last year, third base, the Tigers were the fourth worst, and the Mets were the absolute worst. Seems like they could use a third baseman. The Yankees weren't very good. The Brewers weren't very good. The Giants weren't very good. So there are teams out there that could, you know, sign him and improve their team too. But
and you know what? I'm surprised with the Mets too. You look at their third base situation and Brett Batty. Batty. I would think that there's even a possibility. I know they're trying to shore up the rotation a little bit. And I mean, Quintana, you have Quintana, Severino. They've signed three pitchers really to fill the back end. I mean, everybody forgets about, I forgot about this too, via the trade from Milwaukee for Adrian Hauser. Mm. So I thought the Mets would maybe be a good trade partner, but I think they're going to stand pat for what they have, surprisingly, based off that. But yeah, there's, when I look at teams that are left in terms of who's going to sign where, somebody mentioned to Seattle, the Seattle trade, they were dumping salaries so they can sign Blake Snell. We'll see. I mean, Snell, I don't like, I feel like he's going to end up somewhere where no one saw it coming. Just a team out of the dark. Just that's, I think, what's going to happen. So,
see that, yeah.
So here's a question that came up, and this is a topic question. So it came up where Chris had a good idea. Chris, why don't you introduce this great idea of yours?
I don't know if it was a great idea, but no, I actually I was listening to the Days of Roar podcast the other day with our buddies Mark and Evan, and they had a guest on, and they were talking about Parker Meadows, and Mark seems relatively high on him, and Evan seems relatively low, and I feel like we've been pretty, you know, at the minor league site, we've been pretty damn high on Meadows. I think we were pushing him up into the top four, top three in the system. Mm-hmm. And it just occurred to me, like, I don't quite get why people are down on Parker Meadows. I feel like they're not down, I guess, but they just, like, to me, he's a top 100 prospect in baseball. But I think that kind of narratives get built. And the narrative was for 2-3 years or so that Parker Meadows couldn't hit because he couldn't. And then he adjusted and was pretty damn good in Double A.
Yes.
As a, 21-year-old? At 276, and that was after a very slow start. And then last year in the minors, I'm looking from from May 31st through the end of his minor league season, August 19th, he hit .268 with 13 home runs.
Yep.
And that just, to me, like, you know, he came up and we saw him for 45 games and we saw the defense was spectacular and we saw flashes of the power and the speed. The big question is like, can he hit? And I just feel like he's a better hitter than people realize. And just because, you know, he's had some, you know, he didn't tear AAA up last year. It was like a .250 average, but again, that was after a rough start, which we expect sometimes from when guys move up a level. So I just kind of thought like, hey, you know what? It wouldn't shock me if Parker Meadows gets more Rookie of the Year votes than Cole Keith, which, I guess it's a mildly hot take considering how much we've talked about Cole Keith. But then somebody posted in I think it was Cameron showed in, you know, we're having our pre-show discussion that that I think in our buddies Tigers Torkmoil had already pointed this out on Twitter a couple days ago that Parker Meadows actually has better odds to win Rookie of the Year than Cole Keith.
Yeah.
And to me, that's probably right. So I don't know. I mean, that was just kind of the general discussion. It was like, yeah, who do you think has a better chance to win Rookie of the Year? Is it Parker Meadows in center field, or is it Cole Keith at second base, third base?
Well, you know, Parker Meadows has the track record of, as you're kind of getting at, the slower starts at each level, learning his ropes, and then making that next step. You know, it took a long. He became a permanent resident at West Michigan, right? They probably have a statue of him there somewhere. He was there for a long time, but now he's made his progression. He hit the majors last year, so he has that little bit of a head start. Experience wise on Colt Keith. So, cause you have to believe Colt Keith will have his adjustment phase as well.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Parker Meadows is already through a majority of whatever that phase ends up being for him. So if he were to get off to a hot start, you know, a lot of narratives for Rookie of the Year are built in April. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if Parker Meadows hits, you know, 7 home runs in April and hits 265, 270, all of a sudden you're like, wow, they got a center fielder, you know, no matter what he does the rest of the year. And that's, he'll always have that little bit of an edge on Colt Keith. Who knows? I mean, that's a scenario.
I think what gives him the edge over Colt Keith is his defense, because he does play a really good center field. And that's something that when you're talking about him being, he might as well have a statue of West Michigan. West Michigan has one of the biggest center fields in all the minor league baseball. And Meadows made it look really easy out there.
Yeah.
Honestly, when West Michigan hasn't really been the same since he left. There's nobody that really been able to man the outfield out there, just like him. But the more you look at Parker Meadows as far as a guy who can, I don't want to put five tool player. I'm not going to say that, but just he has a lot of good elements going towards him where he is. I mean, he's quick out of the box too, and that's the speed makes up for it. The defense is going to be play up better than Cole Keith. Defensively, he's going to be better than Cole Keith because he plays at a premium position where you need to be there enough to where they're considering even putting Riley Green in left. And that's how good Parker Meadows' glove is in center field.
Oh, you know, it's anecdotal, but I tell it a lot to people I talk to about Parker Meadows online and here. Here in Des Moines, I've seen him play, you know, several times. He made a play once in the gap that I was standing behind home plate, and that ball was crushed. And I was saying, man, looked like a sure double off the bat. And he was playing shaded the other way. He got to that ball, and it's not that he caught it, but how easy he caught it. I couldn't believe it. I mean, he was galloping like a thoroughbred. And I said right there myself in my own mind, based off one play, which is dumb, I know, but still, that's a guy who he's at least your fourth outfielder, because you know he can catch anything out there for you.
Yeah, I mean he's kind of an extra base monster on both sides of the field. Like he's going to track down fly balls or, you know, line drives and grounders to the gaps and keep him to a single. And on offense, he's going to turn that ground ball to the gap into a double. Like. There's a ton of value in what he does, and we saw it in a small sample. And you always expect that players are, you know, the league's going to adjust, and he's going to have to figure out a way to adjust back. But just if you, and this is never fair, but you know, he put up one WAR in 37 games last year. If you with a 94, 93 WRC plus, So not even an average offensive player, but he was walking a fair amount and playing great defense. If you extrapolate that out to the rest of the season, you're talking a 3-4 WAR player as a rookie. And that's pretty rare. Now, it's not that easy. You know, there were points when Akil Badu looked like a 6-4 player as a rookie. And, you know, things have changed. But yeah, I mean, the big question is the hitting. And I just was like, all right, well, let's drill down into some of his information a little bit more. And the first thing that I looked at actually was, and this is just completely anecdotal, doesn't matter at all, but his debut last year is almost identical to Derek Hill's in 2021. In terms of Derek Hill actually had hit for a little bit more average, but the you know, 3 home runs, a handful of stolen bases, you know, almost the same number of plate appearances and games. The big difference is, and this is a big difference, it doesn't seem like that much, but Meadows walked basically 6% more and struck out like 3% less, which is huge. Mm-hmm. You know, that's pretty big. But I just wanted to look at where Meadows ranked among Tigers hitters in various plate discipline stats. And it's really damn good. Again, it's a small sample, but he had the third lowest chase rate. So he's not swinging outside of the zone. Only people who chased less than him were Jake Rogers and Zach Short. He had the fifth highest zone contact on the team, ahead of Kerry Carpenter, Riley Green, and Spencer Torkelson. So he's making more contact in the zone than the three best hitters on the team, right? Had the fourth highest contact rate overall, behind only Vierling, McKinstry, and Ibanez. The third lowest swinging strike rate, only behind McKinstry and Vierling. His swinging strike rate was 9.4% last year. That's the exact same as Freddie Freeman. Fourth highest called strike rate, though. He's taking lots of strikes. The second lowest swing rate. He swings less than anybody but that than Zach Short. And the second lowest in zone swing. The only person who swung less at pitches in the zone was Matt Vierling. So my conclusion is, swing more. Parker Meadows, swing more often. You're making contact in the zone. You're not swinging and missing. Swing a couple times more, and you're going to do more damage and probably be better. Now, it's never that easy, right? He may not be swinging at pitches in the zone because he knows his swing and knows that those are pitches he can't do anything with. But I don't know. With that level of contact and ability to put the bat in the ball and the power and his launch angle is ideal, there's just a lot to like there. I just want to see him swing like 5% more.
Well, and with a little more experience and a little more confidence, that may occur. I mean, that's certainly in the realm of possibility, too. You're right. He's just such an athlete. I mean, he's such he's got so many gifts. You just got to hope that that hitting is it's just enough where he can be a starting center fielder and they could really have something there.
Yeah, and that's where, I mean, looking at, we had him as part of our call him up series a few months, just about a month before he got called up, I think. Right around then. And it's stuff like this right here. This is what I was talking about with that little flurry at over the shortstop. When he does make contact, even when he's trying not to, when he gets the bat on the ball in terms of just putting the ball in play, it's a much better approach than when he had before he made swing change mechanics at West Michigan, where West Michigan was kind of predictable on where it was going, but he's able to hit to all fields now more often than he did before. And that's in terms of plate coverage and making those additional, that swing tap change, if you look at the way his front foot is, that definitely went a long way. And for the Tigers, I know there's people losing patience at Park Meadows, but he has a higher ceiling. Somebody asked if he has a higher ceiling, him or Carpenter. I think Meadows has a higher ceiling because Meadows, there's an example of when he can put the ball in air, and he had a lot, I think it was among, I looked at Jerry's spreadsheet, excuse me, he was one of the top in among exit velocity too in Toledo, I believe.
No, absolutely. And that was another thing. I compared his StatCast data in Toledo to his StatCast data in, you know, a short period of time in the big leagues, and it all pretty much translated. His average exit velocity went from 87.6 in AAA to 89.3 in the big leagues, which is you know, very good. And his max exit velocity was 108.9 in the big leagues, which is, it was 110.8 in the minors, but that's, you know, he had about 250 more balls in play in the minors, so he was going to have more opportunity there. But yeah, his barrel rate, 9%, like there's a lot to like there with the bat. You know, and like I said, he may just, it may be that in order for him to have offensive success, he has to be this kind of passive hitter who doesn't necessarily swing much. But I don't know. Yeah, I'm hoping, as you've said, that he learns himself a little bit more and gets a little bit more aggressive in the big leagues. And then, you know, if he just hits 220, 230, that's fine. He's going to be a solid average big leaguer. If he can hit 250 plus, there's all-star potential. I would never say superstar without, you know, being able to project him to hit 280, 300, but the rest of the tools are that good that, yeah, he could really be kind of a surprise key contributor.
Another thing is, I'm looking here, unless I'm missing something, never really been hurt. You know, he answers the bell. I mean, that's a nice ability to present a team. You know, when we think of the frustration we had with Derek Hill, as you mentioned earlier, who got hurt when the wind was too high. And, you know, Riley Green starting to show a little bit of that. We'd like to see that reverse itself.
Yeah.
He was hurt a little bit in 2021, but that's other than that, but still played almost 100 games. So,
yeah, Sam was talking about earlier, mentioned in the chat, the Max Clark, Stan, or the Seth Stevenson and Parker.
Yeah.
Or Parker Meadows, yeah, too. But I still think you don't see somebody's muster until you see somebody go through double A. So until I see Seth Stevenson go through a full season of double A and hit above 260 with some good average exit velocity and can, you know, be an impactful player. I'm not saying he's not impactful now. Seth Stevenson, we've had him on the podcast, but double A is really where you see if somebody's gonna be a prospect or not, if they're gonna be a major leaguer. And that's where the level of competition is better. And when Parker Meadows made that adjustment, when he got the double A after tearing up to West Michigan, he made double A look like no problem. Then we completely changed the opinion about him, and he rose through the prospect rankings pretty quickly. So if Steph Stevenson can do that, by all means, we'll put him up there as well.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I, you know, like you said, I don't want to denigrate Seth Stevenson, but he's not a very big dude. He's got sneaky power, but he's a guy that I'd be shocked if he ever hits double digit home runs in a season. He's really good at getting hit by pitches and getting on base, and he's very fast and a great base stealer. He's a good defender. There's a lot to like there, but I do wonder once you get, like you said, Raj, once you get to double A, I just wonder if they're going to kind of knock the bat out of his hands. We'll have to see, you know. It's certainly not a bad thing to have a guy who stole 70 plus bases. So he'll be one that's exciting to watch, but I think we do need to see a little bit more game production in terms of power before we, you know, look at him as a future big leaguer.
Yeah. Cause I do see him get time to time getting overwhelmed by really good off speed pitches. So that's where I get a pause on that. And so if he can, again, we'll see how he answers the bell once he gets to that level. But there was another question in the chat too, I believe, that we're discussing you talked about the rookie of the year. Okay. So I think we hit everything on there. It was something else. I felt like I'm missing a question. Let's see here. How many stolen bags will Meadows have? That's a good question. I'm gonna go 25. That's my guess.
That's the number that popped in my head too.
I was thinking 20 with no sweat. So yeah, sure, 25, no problem.
Like, you know, he is never terribly prolific as a base dealer, but he started getting really efficient last year. I want to say he went like 27 for 30 last year between AAA and the majors. And he stole a lot in the big leagues in a short amount of time. I think eight in 37 games.
And that's where the new rules come in, you know?
Yeah, and it's that one to me is a matter of playing time. If he's going to walk at a 10% rate and play 140, 150 games, he's going to steal you 25-plus bases. Just even if he doesn't want to, they'll make him.
Now, could he go 20-20?
he certainly has the power to do that. He did last year. I feel like he's more of a 14, 17 home run guy. But who knows? If he swings more, maybe he does go 20-20. I think the upside is certainly there. I've always compared him to Dexter Fowler, who I don't know if he ever had a 20-20 season, but he was a very tall, rangy center fielder with power and speed. And he put it together once or twice, and I believe he was an all-star. And that's kind of the player I envisioned for Parker Meadows. He's probably never going to – he'll hit 230 to 250 most years, I think. But every now and then he might pop to 270, and that's all-star stuff.
Yep. And he turns singles into doubles. That's huge. Yep. Those extra bases mean a lot.
Yeah, we saw an example of that just now, the what he was doing in Toledo. I mean, in terms of getting out of the box so quick, I remember Chris had his – we have our little – stopwatch and what have you. So he flies out of the box pretty quickly. He is a gazelle. There we go. Yes. You're talking about like a throat or purebred horse. I think of a gazelle. So I would think that'd be my kind of a comparison.
There's no question to me, the highlight, if he makes it and plays a lot, the highlight of seasons for me will be watching that guy leg out triples at Comerica Park. Because watching him run is fun. It really is. I mean, for the folks who haven't gotten to see it live, I've been fortunate enough to see it live. The guy, it's so graceful. Like a gazelle. That's a wonderful comparison. And so, yeah, he's playing in the perfect stadium where if he can put balls up that gap, he'll be on third base all the time. It'll be fun.
I think one of the highlights for Matt Shepard last year, you know, rest in peace, not rest in peace, but you know what I mean. When Meadows hit a triple, it was over the center field's head and off the wall, and Meadows is running, and he just goes, "Look at that speed!" And yeah. I was like, yeah, all right. Hey, great.
Yes. Oh, man. So in the chat, Tyler wanted to know a little more about what Anthony Iopisi is going to bring to the Tiger staff. And so a couple of things.
A lot of vowels. You're bringing vowels.
Yes, a lot of vowels. And he was a former hitting coach in Texas and the Cubs. So that's the kind of having another set of eyes to help out the hitting. That's what he's going to bring as a first base coach. I mean, granted, he can definitely do some good work with that. So that's where he has some familiarity with the Cubs. He was there when Greenberg was there and I believe Harris. So that familiarity and what he can and do, but that definitely gives another hitting coach because James Ronson went to the Yankees. Yeah. So
yeah, I think Iopisi is a very well regarded hitting instructor, and basically that's what they've done is they've gotten they replaced one of their three hitting coaches with another hitting coach. He's going to be the first base coach or whatever, right? But it's really just another guy to bounce ideas off and evaluate hitters, and he's familiar with certain players who were in Toledo last year. Players like, I don't know, Parker Meadows, Colt Keith, Justice Bigby, Justin Henry Malloy, Ryan Kreidler, Andre Lipsius, all these guys. So he knows all these young guys, and so I think it was a nice promotion. And then with Cora, I think the hope there is that he's going to be a bit of a Javi Baez whisperer, right? Like that's or something that there's somebody there who can, you know, he's a Puerto Rican that maybe he can connect with Javi Baez somehow and maybe find a way to get something out of him. And he's familiar with Hinch. So, you know, that's the way they like to do it.
So Stan, by the way, asked about Isaac Pacheco. We're going to save that for the minor league. We're going to be recording the minor league mailbag, I think either tomorrow or Saturday with all the impending doom weather that's actually going to look like it might take place. So we'll be recording the mailbag. We also got a couple questions from the Philippines. So I'm actually pretty stoked. We're going to be putting that link back out there. So if you have plenty of time for the minor league stuff, we'll definitely be doing that. As far as bullpen help goes too, from what I've heard, it's just, they're going to stick to what they have with minor leaguers and what have you. So I think the Tigers may be done on that front, but we'll see. But I haven't heard anything as of yet about that. So
this will be the year of the Bo Brisky breakout, just for alliteration sake. Yeah. Yeah. I like it.
We saw flashes of it last year. He was looking like the second coming of Jason Foley. Still needs to get a better breaking ball, but then so did Foley, and Foley finally seemed to break one out last year. I was like, whoa, that's pretty damn good. Mm-hmm. So, it's a good arm there. There's another fun development story over the last few years. There's been more and more of them. And, I think Tyler Madison has a chance to come up and pitch. Kyler Montero could be working out of the bullpen. Wilmer Flores could be working out of the bullpen. They have plenty of interesting arms available to them this year. It has felt like, to me, it wasn't that long ago when there were 8-9 guys in the 40-man roster that they could just go, all right, see you later. And it's getting down to like one or two now where I would be upset, or wouldn't be upset if they lost them. So Scott Harris has done a good job there, backfilling the roster, and now it's just, maybe time to get some more impact players.
Yeah.
All right, so last week I said that I was going to give away this Ty Cobb bobblehead. Right. Okay? So people put their name in there and what have you that were chatting with us last week. So this is the bobblehead right here, the Ty Cobb bobblehead I'm going to give away this evening. So that being said, I was thinking about somebody, one of our regular listeners suggested maybe doing like a random, like there's some sort of way of taking random names on YouTube and draw them a hat and everything. And I thought about that, and there's some people here that are in the chat now that were here last week, and there's some they're not. So I want to give everybody an opportunity, and we're going to do trivia. We're going to do some good old fashioned trivia. It's not going to be Tiger trivia. I mean, I was thinking about doing Tiger. I could do Tiger trivia for one of the oldest players. And actually, this is going to be a Tiger question. I found one that will work. So,
all right,
here we go. Here's the question. And, Let me find my Jeopardy music too, because I do have some Jeopardy music I want to play. By the way, just as a note, reported from Ken Rosenthal, Mize requested $840,000 in arbitration. The Tigers offered $815,000, just $75,000 above the minimum salary for 2024. Sources told The Athletic. So just as a heads up on that.
So Mize only wanted $840,000 and they only offered $815,000.
Yeah.
So they're going up. So over 20. So yeah, something's up, man.
Wow. Yeah, it sounds a little.
$25,000. They spend that on fertilizer in like a week.
Sounds a little suspicious to me. Yeah. I hope it's not. I hope it's not just something is related to salary. Maybe it's injury related or something. They see something. I don't know. I hope that's not the case. That'd be embarrassing. Over that, it's just ridiculous. But All right, so let me, as I queue this up a little bit here. So here we go. We're going to ask. This is a tiger did this feat. All right. So the question: who was the first batter to homer off a pitcher whose Cy Young Award came before the hitter was born? A question again. Who was the first batter to homer off a pitcher whose Cy Young award came before the hitter was born? And don't Google it, folks. Don't Google that question. That's the question. Who was the first batter to homer off a pitcher whose Cy Young Award came before the hitter was born? So, you guys have any guesses?
I have a bunch of guesses, but I don't know.
He's a Tiger.
Oh, okay.
If you have a guess, please put in the private chat, Chris and Uber.
The hitter was, or the batter, or the pitcher?
So what, Uber? I'm sorry.
Was it the hitter or the pitcher was the Tiger?
The hitter was the Tiger.
Was he a Tiger at the time of the homer?
Yes, he was. He was a Tiger when this happened. Tyler, Mike.
Wrong!
No. Aggressively wrong.
No, if you want to name the pitcher too, they're this is okay. Yeah. No. Let's see here. It is a Tiger. It's a guy. He did it in the Tigers uniform.
Nolan Ryan never won a Cy Young, right?
I don't think he did.
Someone guessed Nolan Ryan here.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the hardest parts for me is like, okay, how many? Like, so I in my head, I was originally thinking like Ken Griffey Jr. off Nolan Ryan or Jim Palmer or something weird like that, but it's the Tigers, so that
okay. I'll give you guys one hint. What would you say, Youper? Youper.
I didn't get it all out of my mouth.
Wrong. Youper.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I know it now.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that was the first.
Son of a bitch. You son of a bitch. All right, You know what, man? I gotta switch the question because I think he said it. All right.
Has anybody guessed it? Hey, Sarah's in there.
Yeah.
So you can't win.
Yeah, you can't win. Chet Lemon, no. Okay. See here. All right. So no one's guessed it, but Youper got it. Okay. So if somebody, there's a delay going on too. So that's why I'm gonna wait to see what happens here. But I got another question just in case. Eric Munson.
Wrong!
All right, I'll give you a hint. It has happened since the year 2000. So think year 2000 and up. There you go. 2005 and up. Sorry, 2005 and up.
I have a really fun story for a hint, too, if you want to get there, if we need another hint.
Yeah. If not, I have another question. And this question is actually a really good one, too. And it's Tiger-related. But I think people would get this one. Sean Casey.
Wrong!
So remember, this has to be a young player who did this. So who was the first batter to hit a home run off a pitcher whose Cy Young Award came before the hitter was born? Tony Clark.
Wrong!
Mike Avellis.
Wrong!
So this player was called up to a large American city where the Tigers were playing at the time.
No, he was okay. He was in a Tigers uniform when this happened.
Yes, okay. And he was called up to the Tigers. They were in a large city of another team, and he showed up with t-shirts and ripped jeans on. Right, and
oh come on, Aaron. Yes, sir. You are.
How's that?
Yes,
that was not a bad.
Yeah,
ripped jeans.
Eric, congratulations, or Aaron Craig, yeah. Got it right. Cameron Maven,
Aaron,
is the question or answer. So, Aaron, do me a favor. Email me your address, tigersmlreport@gmail.com, and this Ty Cobb bobblehead is yours. So, congratulations, Aaron, on winning based off Cameron Maven.
I was shocked that was the first time ever because Cameron Maven was born in 1987. Homer, in his first plate appearance, I believe, maybe not his first plate appearance, maybe he singled in his first plate appearance. I don't remember, but
first
homered off Roger Clemens, who won the Cy Young Award in 1986. I remember that game distinctly. I was driving to Dearborn for a bachelor party and I was listening on the radio.
So, I didn't know the rip jeans were a giveaway.
Yeah, because
I didn't know that.
I remember his debut. I remember that.
My fun story of that is I always remember this because he was a classy guy, because he showed up with such bad clothes. Miguel Ordonez took him to one of the finest tailors in New York City and bought him like three suits, you know, with all the shirts and ties and everything that goes with it, because that's just the kind of guy Miguel was.
Aaron, I gotta ask: did you look it up? I'm sure he didn't, because the base off his answer, I don't think he looked it up. But next time, I will do another bobblehead. If there's a Don Kelly bobblehead out there, I will get it. But this is for Aaron,
and I won't talk next time.
Yeah, because you almost said it too. I'm like,
well, dude, I was so excited that I thought of it.
What? You know what? What I remember about that, you know, it was the year before was the magical 2006 season, right? And they brought up Andrew Miller, who was their draft pick that year, and maybe it was the draft pick the year before Miller, right? 2005.
Yeah,
it was very, very young. And I remember people thinking like, oh, I wonder if they'll do it with Maven too. And I'm like, no, he's in A-ball and he was in West Michigan. They brought him up to Erie. He played like five games and went bonkers. And they just brought him up to the big leagues.
Yeah. Because the Rossi gave him an S.
And I just randomly the other day, I saw an MLB Network thing piece with they were talking to Cameron Maven and Jim Thome. And they were asking him about their memorable experiences. And Maven was talking about that first game and how Jim Leland gave him the hit and run sign and he missed it. He just let the ball go right by, and he gave it to him again, and he hit a home run. I was like, oh, well, all right, that'll get on the good side of the skip.
I will completely agree. You know what, Aaron, based off of how you answered it, I completely could see that. So, yeah, that's some good logic there. So, congratulations. And the other question I had, just for us and, you know, us and giggles, name the only modern era Hall of Fame pitcher who over a three-year span led the league and wins the first year, losses in the second, and wins again in the third year. I'll say it again. This is a guy who's an entire uniform. Named the only modern era Hall of Fame pitcher who over a three-year span led his league and wins the first year, losses the second year, and wins again in the third. He didn't pitch. What are you talking, Big Poppy? Get out of here. Good Lord.
And this is a Tiger, you said?
Yeah.
I mean, the only one I could, should I say?
You know what? I mean, this is open game, so anybody can say it.
No, I guess.
Huh. I'm going Jim Bunning.
You said Jim Bunning?
Wrong!
Oh.
Danny McClain.
Wrong!
Not a Hall of Famer, right?
Correct. It has to be a Hall of Fame pitcher.
I mean, the only one I could think of was Jack Morris, but I don't think he ever led the league in losses.
Anybody going once, going twice?
Yeah, and Mike Morrell, certainly.
Nate Cornejo, that's good.
Well, wait, who other? I'm trying to think. This is what other Hall of Fame pitchers have pitched for the Tigers?
You know what, Chris? I've realized this is right in your blind spot. This one in particular is your blind spot. I'm surprised you didn't get this one.
Really?
I actually knew this one before.
Yeah, Bunning was a good answer. One.
Yeah, but this is – you got to think about it from
– And you said this is in a particular era, right? This isn't Hal Newhouser, right?
Yep.
What?
Yes!
Oh, Newhouser.
Yeah, okay. It is Newhouser.
All right. For some reason, I was thinking like the 50s on.
Yeah. He said in modern era Hall of Famer. So he got in. He got in later in the Hall of Fame.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, he went 26-9 in 1946, 17-7 in 1947, and 21-12 in 1948. The reason why they put that caveat in there is because Eddie Seacott also did the same thing for the White Sox from 1917 to 1919. But again, that was also during the dead ball era. So that's a completely,
I'm looking at his, that's wild. I'm looking at his baseball reference page. Led the league in wins in 44, 45, 46, and 48, and then led the league in losses in 47.
Yeah.
That's interesting. You know, wins and losses are always, who was it I was talking about the other day? I think Shelby Miller had one of the most unlucky win loss seasons of all time with the Braves, was it? I think, yeah. The amount of innings, he threw like 200 innings and went like 7-19 with like a 3 ERA. That's interesting.
Yeah. You know what's fun? The hardest one I found, there was a couple of them there. It was a page I saved. This one was a really hard one, too. Who was the only Rookie of the Year award winner to be a Seattle Pilot? Remember, the Pilots were only around for 1 year. And that would be Lou Piniella. Because he began the season with the Pilots in 1969, was traded to the Royals.
Yeah,
he won the Rookie of the Year with the Royals in 69. So that's a fun fact. He won the Rookie of the Year with a .282 batting average and 11 home runs.
Well, what year was it?
1969.
So, I mean, that was the first year with the lowered mounds, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
I guess offense was still a little bit iffy. I don't know. There have been some real rough rookies of the year in the Chris Coughlins of the world.
My favorite stat about this.
Pat Listash.
Ooh. Yeah, my favorite one before we get out of here was this one right here. Who's the only pitcher in MLB history with the perfect game, immaculate inning, and 4 strikeout inning?
I was going to go.
Go ahead.
Max didn't get the perfect game, right? Yeah. He was a hit batter away or an error away. Randy Johnson?
Same team, but not him. It was a King Felix.
Oh.
Yeah. He did an immaculate inning on June 17th, 2008, a 4 strikeout inning on June 3rd, 2010, and a perfect game on August 15th, 2012. So, yeah.
I was going to say Schilling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So congratulations again. And I wanted to end the podcast in a different way a little bit there. So Felix Hernandez there, Tyler got that as well. So, but beyond that, we're out of here. We're going to be doing the Tigers mailbag this weekend. So we're going to be looking for questions again. If you want to donate, again, if you want to help us get to spring training, you want to help us with anything, just overall costs for the website right here is the web. You can find the link in our YouTube comments and we'll put in the show description as well. Every bit helps. Like I said, goes back to gear towards back towards everything. We're indie and we're not signed by a company. I mean, we're a part of the Believe Network, but I still haven't gotten paid. We still haven't gotten paid the podcast for it yet either. So we do a lot of this. Yeah. We do a lot of this on our own free will. We love doing it and we just a little help goes a long way. So on that note, so if the Tiger pending a Tigers trade again, this is the time of year I don't like in sports because the Pistons are bad, but I mean, the Lions are playing on Sunday. They're playing a playoff game for the first time in a long time. So there's Packers. That. So are the Packers. Yeah, Packers. Yes. The Packers yeah. playing. So
it's, yeah. it is, I believe it is the best year for football in Southeast Michigan. Unless you're a Michigan State fan, but what are you doing in Southeast Michigan? Since the 50s, 40s.
Yeah.
And also simultaneously the worst year for basketball in Southeast Michigan since who knows?
Long time.
Boy, what an awful year. But I'll take that trade, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, right now as it stands, I mean, this is the time of year though. It's just going to be, you want baseball to start. I'm really, really want baseball to start. So yes. We're also going to be doing a just miss our YouTube channel. On a Tiger Mining Report, we're doing 60-second shorts. We're going to be doing more shorts videos, so it's going to be guys who missed our list, so like Trey Cruz, Carson Rucker, and a couple others, too. We're working on that, too, in the background. So, but, yeah, on that note, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching. Shout-out to everybody. Again, make sure that you subscribe to all our channels. It's a plug away, and we'll talk to you soon. Have a good night, everybody.
Stay warm.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.